I last came to Scotland, I believe, must have been 1973 or 4, before I joined the movement. Bad days. One memory, I just arrived in the bus station coming from, I think it was in Glasgow, just coming from, I think it was from Dunfermline or somewhere. So I went in the toilet, and there was a wino, and he was asking me for my knife. I couldn't understand what he was saying. After a little time, I could understand. I said, well, I don't have a knife. And then he said, look, you know, I don't want to, I just needed to get the top. He showed his wine bottle. The top was going round and round, you know, the metal top. You need the knife to cut it off. And he couldn't believe. See, I just wanted to get the top off my wine bottle. He didn't believe that I didn't have a knife. That's one memory. That was my initiation into life in Glasgow. Anyway, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, save me from such nonsense wanderings in the material world. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Itinamine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarne Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tinamine Shri Varshabhanavi Devi Dayataya Kripabdhaye Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Dayane Prabhave Namaha Madhuryojvala Premardhya Shri Rupa Noga Bhaktida Shri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Shri Murtiye Dinatarne Rupa Noga Virudha Bhasiddhanta Dvanta Harne Namo Gaura Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtiye Vipralambha Rasambodhe Padambujayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupa Noga Varayate Gauravi Bhava Bhumes Twam Nirdeshta Sajjana Priyaha Vaishnava Sarva Bhoma Sri Jagannathaya Te Namaha Namasreshtam Manamapi Shakti Putra Matra Surupam Rupam Tas Yagrajam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Giriva Ramahora Radhika Madhava Sham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shigurum Tamnatosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yatav Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha. I was asked to speak on Bhakti Siddhanta. I saw on the printer I was given that I'm supposed to, every lecture is on the same topic. Well, actually every lecture should be on the Bhakti Siddhanta. If there's anything but Bhakti Siddhanta, then there's a problem. We're only supposed to speak Bhakti Siddhanta. Bhakti Siddhanta means the proper conclusion of pure devotional service to Krishna. But I was under the impression that I was going to speak once on that and not on every lecture. So I may speak more broadly about Bhaktisiddhanta. I mean, in other words, not directly on this topic of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. I'm scheduled to speak tomorrow morning. Is it? Okay, so maybe tomorrow morning I can give a regular Bhagavatam class, whatever the verse is. Okay, so presumably I was asked to speak on Bhakti Siddhanta because I had the good fortune to take up the service of compiling a book on Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, copies of which are available here. Has anyone here read this book? You've read it? How far did you get?
I didn't read it from the beginning.
You opened it up. You read different parts, yeah. Okay. Approximately how much, percentage-wise?
About a quarter.
About a quarter of it, okay. All right, anyone else? You read?
It would be from the beginning, a couple of chapters.
Couple of chapters, okay. Anyone else? No, all right.
One of the devotees who stays here, he's traveling, he's coming back tonight, but he's read the book.
Read the whole thing, yeah. I guess when you look at it, people might be turned off just at the size of it. We live in the cartoon age. People are not accustomed to for anything that strains their neurons more than Tom and Jerry. Or I guess Tom and Jerry's out of date now, is it? If same kind of theme, someone bashes someone else. More sophisticated ways nowadays, I guess. Anyway, devotees are meant not to be shallow, not to be cartoon types. There is a cartoon recently come out called Little Krishna, it's called in English. I think it was originally released in Hindi. Someone gave some of them to me. I looked for about 20 seconds, I just deleted them all. This is not Bhakti Siddhanta. Might be someone's conception of Krishna, but not. It's not the Krishna who we receive from Bhaktivedanta, Bhakti Siddhanta, Gorkishaw, Bhaktivinoda. It's not our parampara Krishna. As Srila, one of the many, many quotes from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati in this book is that we are interested in Rupa Goswami's Krishna. Not the Krishna of imagined by the scholars, not the Krishna of the popular reciters. We're interested in Rupa Goswami's Krishna. Rupa Noga Viruddha Apisiddhanta Dvanta Hari. One of the names of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, which is included in his pranam mantra, is he who removes the darkness of erroneous conclusions opposed to that of Sri Rupa Goswami. So this topic, the topic of Bhakti Siddhanta, and particularly the teachings of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, are not for beginners in the modern world. Not as I wrote in the preface or introduction to the book, that the teachings of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati can best be approached by most people in the present time through the teachings of Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, which are non-different. Different and non-different. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's presentation appears to be quite complex. Actually, it's not complex. But it appeared the linguistic structure and the philosophical presentation might appear to be somewhat complex. But actually it's composed in such a style as to be wholly unambiguous, and it's very difficult to... It's stated in a way that cannot be misunderstood. It's particularly aimed at that. Of course, people are expert at misunderstanding everything. And that is our material condition. That we have all become very expert in misunderstanding everything. And even when the clear, plain truth is presented to us, we may imagine so many different theories. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he listened to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya for 8 days? He listened to Sarvabhauma's explanation of the Vedanta Sutras. And Sarvabhauma was known as the greatest scholar of the age. And after so many days of speaking to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "I'm speaking, but you don't say anything, so I don't know whether you understand or not. You don't ask any questions, you don't make any comments, so I don't know whether you understand or not." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Yeah, I understand the Vedanta Sutras very well, but I don't understand a word that you're saying. It doesn't make any sense." Which was a great challenge for Sarvabhauma. He was supposed to be, he had taken the role of teaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the Vedanta Sutras, they are clear. Their meaning is self-evident. But your explanations, I mean Sarvabhauma's explanations, which are derived from those of Shankara, Shankaracharya, as he's sometimes called, they simply cover the clear meaning, which it was a great challenge to Sarvabhauma, and then debate ensued. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed that actually the meaning is very clear, but only, of course, because we are covered by various misconceptions, we need someone to point out how it's clear, because if we try to study Vedanta Sutra, for a start, we can't because we don't know Sanskrit. But even if we knew Sanskrit, if we just studied it without help, we wouldn't see it because it doesn't seem so clear to us because our heads are so muddled. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, actually his teachings are very clear. But due to the language, it may seem makes it very difficult and obscure. But actually the language is such that everything is precise and definite and clear, which is possible, more possible if in Sanskrit or languages derived from Sanskrit. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote mostly in what is generally called Bengali, but he called his language Gauriya Bhasha, which means the language of the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Is not like ordinary Bengali at all. If you read it to any, even educated Bengalis, unless they're particularly studied in this line, unless they've studied his writings and associated with him or his devotees, even a highly educated Bengali, they can't understand it. Because it's technical language, it's philosophical language, just like in any technical field, doctors, if they talk among themselves, people are not trained in medicine, can't understand. If they're talking about medicine, then people are not trained, can't understand, because they're using they have their particular vocabulary, or in any field. In any specialized field, there's a specialized vocabulary. So similarly, in the field of Vedanta Darshan, or the philosophical understanding of Vedanta, there is a certain technical terms which are used. And even those terms, they have to be defined differently they're defined or used differently by different schools. Just like the word bhakti is there in every Indian language that is derived from Sanskrit, which means most of them. Most languages, except Urdu, I guess, and maybe the languages of the northeast, and maybe some tribal languages. It's propose that Tamil is not derived from Sanskrit, but that's bogus. It is derived from Sanskrit. Anyway, the word bhakti is there. It's there in Tamil also, for that matter. But people, the general understanding of bhakti is a rather shallow understanding. It denotes a general feeling of devotion, but it's more precisely defined by various acharyas. For Shankara, bhakti is a means to come to the platform of jnana. For Ramanuja, bhakti is the means to come to the platform of Sharanagati. And for Rupa Goswami, for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, bhakti is the goal, the means and the goal. It is, it's not a means to anything else. It's not that one performs bhakti for the sake of coming to some other platform. But it is in itself the goal. That is actually stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. Bhakti gives rise to bhakti. So, Bhaktisthan Saraswati, he was very, if you read the book, I recommend you read all of Prabhupada's books first, otherwise it will be difficult to understand. In fact, you can read them several times, otherwise it may be difficult even to begin to grasp the concepts. They're all very clear, they're not difficult to understand, but it's good to read Prabhupada's books first. And then that will also help to understand Prabhupada's books, because Prabhupada Bhakti Vedanta is non-different from Bhakti Siddhanta. So yeah, one of the major points of Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur's teachings was proper definition of words. Just like we may ask someone, "Do you believe in God?" and they'll say yes. They may say yes. But when I say God and you say God, the conception is completely different. So I'm thinking of one thing and they're thinking of something else. Or they may say no, but they don't believe in the God. They don't believe in the God that I also don't believe in. See, this idea, do I believe in a God who's sitting on a cloud and throwing down his angry old, very old man, ugly and punishing people? I don't believe in that God. Or do I believe in God who had frizzy hair and then ended up in a wheelchair and died recently? In one sense you believe he existed, but he's not God. And then the question itself is stupid anyway. Do you believe in God? It's a stupid question. Because what does it matter whether we believe in God or not? It doesn't make any difference to whether his existence doesn't depend on our belief. It's a stupid question. So proper usage of words. This was a major point of Bhaktisthan Saraswati. He wanted to make a book with a proper definition of words. So because you can't even begin to communicate unless people understand the words in the same way that you do. We want to talk about bhakti and Bhagawan, which is the term which is maybe translated in English as God. So if I say God and you nod your head, but you're thinking of something completely different, then it may seem that there's communication going on, but it's not. Many people, they think of God, well, there are so many different manifestations of God, and I'm God, you're God, everyone's God, this is God, that's God, God's this, God's that, God's... you can believe in one God on one day, another God the next day. They're thinking of something completely different. So, we might... unless there's a clear understanding of terms, then there's no real communication going on. Okay, £25 fine. Everyone has a mobile phone. What are they called in this country? Cell phones? Okay. You haven't got a phone. You are a wise man. You lost it? Okay. Everyone please take out your dearly beloved cell phone. and turn the damn thing off. So we can discuss Bhaktisiddhanta and not cell phones. Why didn't I remember to say that first? Always it has to go off. So we're discussing a much better topic of Bhakti Siddhanta. One of the topics discussed in this book, how is he wanted to make a compendium, a lexicon, I guess you call it, of with proper definitions of words. And he was so serious about this, he said, if I don't do it in this lifetime, I'll come back and do it again. I'll come back to, this should be done. Otherwise there's no communication. Evam parampara praptam imang raja shayo vidhu. The parampara is going on, but the parampara is, it's a parampara of concepts which are, or conceptions which are communicated by sound. Here with this song of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Krishna hoite chatur mukha, hoi Krishna shivan mukha. How did that happen? How did Brahma become inclined to serve Krishna? Because tene Brahma hridaya adi kaviye, the Vedic sounds were imparted in the heart of Brahma by Krishna. Brahma spoke to Narada. It's sound. The Vedic mantras, they're sounds. So sound, the primordial sound, nada, that is, no, beyond nada, that is conveyed, well, the ultimate sound is omkar, but that is conveyed by the rishis, who are persons who they perceive the Vedic sounds and communicate them to others. So communication is by sound, anavriti shabdat. The Vedanta Sutra's the final statement is that one is released from material bondage by sound, by words. So if the words are not properly understood, then there's no communication. There's no proper communication. There's no clear communication. So that was, that's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, one of his, one of the basic points he wanted to make. So there are so many points in this book. Yeah, I was asked to speak on this because, as I say, I compiled this book. Devotees who read it, several devotees have expressed appreciation. They say it's a great book, that it has changed or revolutionized their understanding of Krishna consciousness. And I agree with them. It's a great book. When I read it also, I also become absorbed in reading it. Not because I think I'm a great, it's a great book because I'm a great author. Not like that, but because he is such a great person. He is such what shall we say, this word great. It's a generally used term, but there is no, what term shall we use? Which word shall we use to describe his greatness? All the adjectives seem worn out when we understand how great he is. And our appreciation of Srila Prabhupada, what a great acharya he is, that's also increased by understanding what a great acharya he represented and how well he represented him. How he understood that the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, how he took them, which were apparently very complex, and presented them in a relatively simple form without compromising anything whatsoever, and gave it to the most unlikely people. So, certainly our appreciation of Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas and our Gaudiya lineage and Krishna should increase by understanding Bhakti Siddhanta. Someone wrote to me about this book, after reading this book, they said, about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, that you, addressing myself, you have brought him to life. But he was never dead. As Srila Prabhupada wrote in his dedication to the Srimad Bhagavatam, he wrote to my eternal spiritual master, Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivrajaka Acharya Ashtotarasata Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhant Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. He lives forever in his divine instructions and the follower lives with him. So Bhakti Siddhanta was, there's no question of him not being alive. He himself said about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the famous words, famous means among his followers, I suppose among his Bengali followers more, because they understand the language that he spoke in. But a famous statement of his, actually there are many famous statements of his which were made in what is generally considered to be his final speech, just a few days before he passed away. He spoke from his, what would normally be considered a sick bed, although devotees are never sick. That should be understood. So that amazing speech in which he said, he started off by saying, I've given troubles to many, for which they may have considered me their enemy, although it was never my, or they may consider that I have oppressed them, although it was never my intention to do them anything but the highest good. And so it's a famous speech. So in that speech, he, toward the end of it, he said, Bhaktivinoda dharana kokano ruddha hoibena. The line, or the dhara, means the flow. It literally means the flow. It means like the flowing of the current of a river, or the current of electricity, like this. So the flow, or the line of Bhaktivinoda, will never be stopped. So, in the same way, Bhakti Siddhanta will never be stopped. He's never dead, because he lives forever in his divine instructions. So this devotee said, you have brought him to life, means that maybe people didn't know so much about him. So in that sense, you could say he brought him to life, or I brought him to life. But actually, it was Srila Prabhupada who, if at all we are to use this expression, it was Srila Prabhupada who brought Bhakti Siddhanta to life. He brought in a world which was, which had been enlightened by the teachings of Bhakti Siddhanta, in which his teachings had appeared to become somewhat eclipsed. Srila Prabhupada really brought the teachings of Bhakti Siddhanta to the world and brought them to life, practically resuscitated them. They're never dead. There's no question of them ever being dead, because bhakti is never dead, but it may sometimes be more prominent in the world and sometimes less prominent. So Srila Prabhupada brought the mission of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, which might have seemed to have been almost a failure. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati came, he preached very powerfully, and then after his passing away there was severe quarreling among many of his followers, and the mission, which was dynamic and powerful, lost its vigor and its rigor. And it wasn't exactly rigor mortis, but it was much less powerful than it was. There was no sign of the vigorous preaching, or the bold spirit, the spirit to go out all over the world. And then Srila Prabhupada took that out to the world. And everyone thought he was crazy, actually, whoever. Mostly people thought, why is he going, this old man? He can't get anything together in India and he wants to go to the West. And what's this idea? He's going to go to the West and preach Krishna consciousness. People thought it was crazy, stupid. There was no one who thought it was a good idea. After Prabhupada went, you'll find so many people who said, actually it was me who encouraged. In the 1970s, I was traveling in India, and in Allahabad, where Prabhupada used to live, I met two people who told me, actually it was me who told him to go to the West. Everyone wants to take credit, but actually no one. They thought he was like eccentric or had some strange fancy. What is this idea of going to the West? What do you want to see the West for? You're already old. You're going to die soon. You're living in Vrindavan. That's the perfection of life. You got this. What is all this? Even living in Vrindavan, always trotting off to Delhi and making magazines that no one's interested in. And they thought he was nuts. I mean, they wouldn't be so rude as to say that, but they thought that it's just some strange idea, very strange. So many people come from retired gentlemen, they come and live in Vrindavan, and especially from Bengal, and many followers of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, many of his disciples, they come to live in Vrindavan, and alright, they come and live in Vrindavan, and alright, and that's what you do. You're old, you live in Vrindavan, and then you die, and that's it. What's this strange idea, going off to the West? But Prabhupada was firm in his determination. He had Bhakti Siddhanta, Vani, dancing in his heart. So he wanted to bring that to the world, and he was completely convinced, although there was no one in the world to support him. The whole world was against him, but he was completely convinced that what he must do. And from all external symptoms, there really was no chance of him doing anything. I mean, you might have thought that if he could bring one or two people in the West to Krishna consciousness, that would be a tremendous achievement. Like Vivekananda brought one sister Nivedita from Ireland. That was his achievement. And of course there were other gurus at that time, so-called gurus in the West from India, but they were just plain cheating people. But that Prabhupada could bring people who were committed to following Vaishnava principles, no one thought it was possible. Even people in India weren't interested, and Prabhupada himself hadn't been able to do anything, at least it appeared like that. Maybe that was Krishna's arrangement, hadn't been able to do anything substantial in India. But he was convinced, let me try. Try or die. So he really brought the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to life. And he always, even though Srila Prabhupada, if we see his qualifications in retrospect, we can see here tremendous determination, tremendous faith in the holy name, tremendous compassion, tremendous tolerance. These are all various complete fidelity to the parampara. These are all the various qualifications by which he was able to bring Krishna consciousness to the West. But he himself only ascribed his success to one qualification. As he famously said on several days, I have no personal qualification, but I simply try to execute the order of my guru. That's all. He felt that it's all simply by the mercy of his guru. That's all. And actually that's true. In one sense it's true that Srila Prabhupada did it because he was the empowered emissary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was sent by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He had tremendous faith in the holy name, tremendous faith in the prediction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, tremendous determination, humility, tolerance, and all qualities of Mahabhagavatas. But even, I mean, even among Mahabhagavatas, there may be so many Mahabhagavatas, but Prabhupada was the one who brought Krishna consciousness to the West. So he had so many qualifications which are not to be discounted. They're definitely genuine spiritual qualifications. But at the same time, he himself repeatedly stated, and which is also true, that all these qualifications come simply because of his complete faith in and determination to serve Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So, as I analyzed to some extent in this book, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is not... Bhaktisiddhanta is not just a name that you can give. So many names may be given. Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Vinod, Bhakti Vedanta, Bhakti Vikas, Bhakti Bringa. There may be the Bhakti may be combined with so many words which which combine with the word bhakti to all these words, they can be, in these cases, either bhakti can be taken as the adjective and the other word as a noun, or the other word can be taken as an adjectively and the word bhakti as a noun. In other words, for instance, if we say bhakti siddhanta, that can mean that the Siddhanta, or the proper conclusion of Vedic study, is bhakti. Or it can mean the Siddhanta, the proper conclusion of bhakti. So either way. Just either way. Just like if we say Radha Krishna, that can mean Radha and Krishna. Or it can mean Krishna's Radha, or it can mean Radha's Krishna. So all meanings are acceptable. So bhakti siddhanta. What is first of all that there is siddhanta. In the modern age, siddhanta means the proper conclusion. After going through all the various studies, what is the proper conclusion? The proper conclusion of Shastra, of the Vedic scriptures, is bhakti. And what is that bhakti? That is the proper understanding of bhakti, the complete understanding of bhakti, is Rupa Anuga Viruddha Apisiddhanta Dvanta Hari. The proper understanding of bhakti as given by Rupa Goswami, which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati again presented because it had become covered by wrong explanations, is anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kama jnana britamanukulyena krishna anushilanam bhakti rutama. The bhakti that is devoid of any other motive than to satisfy Krishna, cultivation of such bhakti, that is considered, that is the highest level of bhakti. So this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach through Rupa Goswami, through all the previous acharyas, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati taught that. Now we're speaking here today obviously about Bhaktisiddhanta. How did he view himself? Well, we see from this song which we just sung that he considered himself, as any bona fide guru must, a servant of the previous acharyas. He mentions all the prominent acharyas in the Madhva Sampradaya and then in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. And he gives all their names, And then he says, Ihara Paramahamsa. These are all Paramahamsas. These are all topmost swan-like devotees. Gaurangera Nijabhamsa. They are all part of the personal family of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's interesting because he includes there all the acharyas from Madhva and in his line also. He doesn't say, and I'm also a Paramahamsa, or I'm the next acharya. He doesn't say that. He says, Tadera charane mamagati. My goal or my destination is their lotus feet. Ami Sheva Udashin. He says, I'm not interested in service. He describes himself as such, although he was, of course, an acharya means who teaches by his service attitude. But he, in humility, he says, I am apathetic to service. And by name, I am a Tridandi. By name, I am a bearer of the three-sticked rod of a sannyasi. And Dina, I am very fallen and lowly. Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So, he doesn't say, well, actually I'm the next acharya, but he closes the song by giving his own name and presents himself as a servant of these acharyas. And that is the position of an acharya, is the servant of the previous acharyas. So of course this is a very important point, that a bona fide guru is a follower of the previous acharyas. And we may take that within our ISKCON society, we may take that almost as a given, because Srila Prabhupada stressed it so many times. But we won't find this stressed in the Mayavadi Sampradaya. So, actually, it's a principle in all Vedic Sampradayas, or those whose stress to follow. But in the modern kind of, what is this, New Age or Mayavad, which is already mad, gone more mad, we won't find it. It's just like, you know, everyone has to do their own thing. Although in many ways Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was innovative and revolutionary, but he placed himself as the servant of the previous Paramahamsa Acharyas in preaching Bhakti Siddhanta. He always emphasize this point, philosophical teaching. As an acharya means one who teaches according to Shastra, and traditionally an acharya means one who not only teaches according to Shastra, but actually teaches Shastra, will teach his disciples the Shastra. It means they have to learn it. That's traditionally what acharyas do. They teach the Vedas to their disciples. And there are still some gurukuls in India where that's going on, where usually only one Veda, or not even the whole Veda, maybe one Sanghita or something like this. But that's first the acharya teaches the Veda, then... Well, there are so many points. There are the Vedangas are to be taught. First of all, the Sanskrit language, the Vedangas and the Veda, and so many points are to be taught. So they would teach the Shastra and the meaning of it. So really the meaning of an acharya in its £25. Hmm? Okay, £20. Want to make an appeal to the High Court? You have to pay your own legal fees. So, Bhakti Siddhanta. Yeah, the Acharya is... They're meant to teach Shastra. That is the basic role of an Acharya. Archinoti yashastrani. Achare sthapyatyapi. Swayam acharate yasmad acharyas tena kirtitaha. This is the definition of an acharya. One who teaches the shastra, who acts according to shastra, and who, what is this, swayam acharate yasmad. By his own example he teaches, he teaches the letter, you can say the by practice and by precept he teaches the shastra, and himself is most he's most scrupulous in following shastra. Such a person is known as an acharya. So actually every acharya should be bhakti siddhanta. That's every acharya has to be bhakti, because the actual message of the Vedas is bhakti. So every acharya should be bhakti, and simply to say bhakti, of course that means shravanam kirtanam vishnu smaranam padasevanam archanam vandanam dasyam sakyam atmanivedanam. This is bhakti's chainava lakshana. This bhakti, as with the nine symptoms of hearing about Vishnu, chanting about Vishnu, remembering Vishnu, and so on. The nine symptoms of bhakti. But specifically the acharya, apart from these activities of bhakti, teaches the understanding. So what is the proper understanding? And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, this was very much his role in teaching the proper understanding, because in Bengal at that time, improper understandings of bhakti were prominent. There are many people who claim themselves to be followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but their understandings, even though they might wear Vaishnav Tilak, be initiated in what was at least superficially a Vaishnav Sampradaya, they might chant Hare Krishna or similar Vaishnava or apparently Vaishnava chants and play madangas and kartels and worship Radha Krishna, and in many ways do everything which might seem that they're a proper Vaishnava, but because their understanding, their conception is not according to Rupa Goswami, then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would point out that these people are, in simple English, off. Then they're not on the right line. They're superficially doing everything properly, but actually, because their conception is not exactly according to Rupa Goswami, therefore, because their understanding is wrong, they're not actually followers of Rupa Goswami. They are Shruti, Smriti, Purana, Adi, Pancharatra, Vidhing, Vina, Aikantaki, Hare, Bhaktiya, Utpataya, Eva, Kalpate. They are, because they're not properly following the message of Shastra, therefore, their so-called bhakti, it might appear to be bhakti, and bhakti is supposed to be most beneficial for human society, but their activities are actually a disturbance in society, because they misrepresent bhakti, and in the name of bhakti, people are going to do so many things or have so many misconceptions which don't actually lead to pure devotional service and to becoming free from all mundane designations and purely serving Krishna and ultimately attaining prema bhakti at the lotus feet of Krishna. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he was a rigid teacher, philosophical teacher. He wrote that even in my commenting on Chaitanya Bhagavat, which is a compendium of the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's not a very philosophical book, as actually Chaitanya Charitamrita has much more philosophical teaching than does Chaitanya Bhagavat. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he commented himself that it's my proclivity is such that even in commenting on Chaitanya Bhagavat, which is mostly about the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, my comments have mostly been all philosophical. So he wanted people to have the correct understanding. Now, yeah, in the modern age, this idea that there is a correct understanding has been, to a large extent, again, in human society, has been covered by Mayavadis, who give the idea that, you could say Neo-Mayavadis, because as Srila Prabhupada noted in that book, which has been translated and published in English as Renunciation Through Wisdom, that even the traditional followers, Shankaracharya himself, he himself would be aghast at what people claiming to follow him, at what they do and what they say. Because Shankaracharya, his teachings were bad enough, but what people have done, and in the name of him, is even much worse. I believe Prabhupada here was referring to the Murgi mission or the chicken mission of Bibekananda and others. The Ramakrishna mission, one of the ways they fund their activities is having chicken farms. So, that is an example of something that Shankara himself would have been aghast at. He would not have approved of that in the name of following himself. So, this Mayavad ideas which have filtrated out to the Western world in the form of what is called New Age. It's old, it's the same hackneyed ideas that have come out in various forms, in various climes, by various bogus people. And just this feel good and talking, using words like harmony, compassion, love, beauty, peace, without ever defining them in relationship to Krishna. Just a general feeling of unity, love, cosmic oneness, peace, bliss, but no reference to Krishna. Spiritual, no definition of spiritual. Just feel good, smile, radiate, something or other. And radiate light. And the most important thing is to always smile and use always terms like nice, beautiful, wonderful, and you use all these words again and again and again, and just feel the good vibes. Om. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was the antithesis of the Mayavadi vagueness, preciseness. His teachings were very precise and clear. This is the right path, which to say that to a New Age pseudo-Mayavadi is just like, he doesn't want to hear it at all. It's not that there is one right path, because all the paths are good. Everything is good. Everything is spiritual. See, when I'm smoking hashish, I feel very spiritual. Very spiritual. See, I'm a vegetarian, and my dog's also a vegetarian. And no, they all have vegetarian dogs. It's in the West also. In Ljubljana, in Slovenia last year, I walked in the temple shop, and I saw packets on sale dog food and cat food. I said, what's this dog food? And come in and said, oh, it's vegetarian. And I couldn't stop laughing for about 10 minutes. I said, actually, it's a good idea, because most of our devotees, they have dogs, so we're doing a service for them and giving them vegetarian. So this is what happens when we don't preach Bhakti Siddhanta, when we don't give the clear knowledge, when it's all just nice and feel good and tell lots of stories of Krishna Prem and have lots of kirtans, which are all not bad in themselves, but unless there's a solid basis in Bhakti Siddhanta, then we'll end up thinking, you know, as is quite common, we have devotees who think that their pet dog, what the hell are they having a pet dog for in the first place? My pet dog is actually a pure devotee. And all kinds of rubbish ideas which have got long way from Bhakti Siddhanta. A long, long, long way. But it looks similar. Looks nice. Looks good. Feels good. That's the most. It feels good. So if it feels good, it must be good. But that wasn't Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's presentation. We should understand clearly what are the teachings. Parampara jano bhalo mate. We just saw. Understand clearly what is parampara. That means we should understand who are these acharyas, what are their teachings, what are the actual teachings of the parampara, which is Bhaktisiddhanta. Only Bhakti Siddhanta. I mean, the proper teachings. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kama dhyanavritam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhakti rutama. There are various definitions of bhakti. This appears at the beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's composed by Rupa Goswami. In the next verse, or the verse prior to that, he quotes Sarva Padhivi Nirmuktam Tatparatvena Nirmanam Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Rutama. Bhakti Uchite, sorry. That bhakti is defined as when one is free from all mundane designations and is fully absorbed in the Supreme, one is free from mundane influences. The heart is pure, and the senses, the thus purified senses, are engaged in the service of the master of the senses. That is called bhakti. So, having listened thus far to what I've said, you may think, well, this is kind of scholarly and sounds more like jnana, and it's not real bhakti. You see, real bhakti is when we hear some stories and then we feel so nice in our heart. This was exactly the kind of criticism that was made of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who spoke in a very scholarly manner, defining exactly what is bhakti in all its nuances, and many supposed to be devotees who he called Prakrita Sahajians, or mundane persons who think that bhakti is very cheap, they would criticize him as being, oh, he's just a jnani. He doesn't really know what bhakti is. So we see that Srila Prabhupada, following the example of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he was always speaking philosophy. There are so many stories about Prabhupada, which are very nice. Siddhanta Prabhu has made this DVD series of devotees' memories of Srila Prabhupada, which are very nice. Maybe a more realistic picture is found in Harishari Prabhu's Transcendental Diary, where we find like the minute by minute what Prabhupada was doing. Harishari Prabhu has not neglected to give summaries of Srila Prabhupada's classes, which he sat down and gave classes, usually minimum once a day, often twice, sometimes three times or even more. And he would speak the philosophy of, straightforward philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Sometimes a little story or anecdote, not in every lecture by any means. In most lectures he didn't tell stories, but it would be short just to make a philosophical point. And straightforward philosophy from beginning to end. Sometimes there was something a little bit humorous, but he wasn't out there to get people to laugh. He was giving a straightforward philosophical discourse. And at night, when everyone was asleep, Prabhupada would be dictating his books. And during the day, he would morning walk. Sometimes he would speak with his disciples philosophically. He would meet people. He would preach to them. So it may be that by hearing so many anecdotes of various things that Prabhupada did, we may get a somewhat imbalanced understanding of perspective of what Srila Prabhupada actually did, because a lot of the time he was speaking, or practically constantly we could say, he was speaking the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. He was speaking Bhakti Siddhanta, which is, of course, Bhakti Vedanta, non-different. So, Hare Krishna. Now it's 6:30. Any questions about all of this? There may be so many questions. You can please read the book. It's a very enlivening book. Yes, please. Do you have any? I think it's going to be too hot to drink. Do you have any cold water also? Yeah. Hari. You told me to say Hari, so I said Hari. Hari. Yeah, if you say Hari Bol, that's ordering me to say Hari. It's a good thing. Oh. Dharam. Primitive question?
Probably, to my way I put it, I probably. The highest bhakti, to reach that, it appears to have a tremendous amount of the foundation and the pillars of a jnana. But when you reach to the highest level, you find that that those pillars and those foundations have no value. Is it a contradiction to itself?
And the statement is that to reach to the highest level of bhakti, the pillars of jnana are required. But then when one gets to the highest level, then jnana is dropped. So is this a contradiction? Well, jnana and concomitant vairagya, knowledge and renunciation, they are in their actual form not separate from bhakti. It's not that jnana is something and bhakti is something else, because jnana means tatvajnana, knowledge of reality. And what is that? In summary, it is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am His servant eternally, and therefore my only duty is to serve Him. So in jnana, actual jnana, is not different from bhakti. And it's not that one has to go through a long, long process of jnana immediately, if one can understand this. But we find in Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam Janmanamante Jnanavangmam Prapadite Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlabaha. After many births, someone who is cultivating jnana, they may surrender to me, knowing me to be all in all, knowing Vasudev, myself, to be all in all. Such a mahatma is very rare. So that refers to people who are cultivating jnana, but they didn't really get the point, because you can get the point right in the beginning immediately. So if one is cultivating what people consider to be atma-gyan, or knowledge of the self, and the difference between the self and matter, but they don't understand, or they don't accept, or they're not inclined to accept Krishna's supremacy, then because they miss that point, they can spend millions of lifetimes without actually coming to the point. So it's not that that kind of gyan actually brings you to bhakti. That kind of gyan is an obstacle to bhakti. But real jnana is non-different from bhakti. It's absolutely inseparable from bhakti. And that will be realized by one who takes to bhakti. Therefore, Vasudeve Bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojataha janyat yashu vairagyam jnanam chayada haitukam. One who takes to bhakti, then one who takes to this path, then immediately, automatically, along with that, come jnana and vairagya, because the actual jnana and actual vairagya are inseparable from bhakti. But what goes on in the world in the name of jnana and vairagya, what people generally think it to be, as being separate from bhakti, that's not actual. It's an incomplete understanding, and that's why people think that jnana leads to bhakti. But actually, jnana is inseparable from bhakti. If one has jnana, then he must be a bhakta. If you don't have jnana, actual complete jnana, then that jnana is really is not very helpful to one. So when one loses that jnana, when one comes to the pure state, well, not really, because the essence of jnana is service to Krishna, and in the pure state, that is not lost, that is enhanced to the fullest extent. So even though, for instance, the gopis of Vrindavan, they're not sitting and discussing philosophy, but they are on the highest platform of jnana because they're fully dedicated to the service of Krishna.
But if you see jnana, it's more, you can say, nothing but knowledge.
What do you mean by jnana? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, you would have you define that. You're saying jnana, what do you mean by it? Knowledge, yeah, that's a very general term. What are you talking about here? Knowledge of how to build factories? You're talking about that?
Yeah, anything like scientific knowledge or...
What do you mean by scientific?
Which is actually one can see, one can... It has some...
You mean empiric knowledge? Well, empiric knowledge is not sufficient. Empiric knowledge, by very definition, cannot lead us or cannot even begin to approach the spiritual. As empiric means that which is materially observable. And spirit, by definition, is not material. Can't be understood by the empiric method. That's another of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's big points. One of his major points, that these foolish people, they reject spiritual knowledge because they think they're empiric. But the very nature of spiritual knowledge, by its very definition, is that it cannot be understood by the empiric method. If it could be, then it wouldn't be spiritual. So you have to take another methodology.
If I get spiritual knowledge, yeah, that's different. And if we just see knowledge...
Well, first we have to know what spirit... So many people use the word spiritual, but what do they mean? They don't even think that they should understand what they mean. They consider it to be a vague term, but it's not a vague term. From Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that there is matter, which is bhumirapa nalo vayo kangmano buddhireva cha ahankara iti yang me bina prakritirashtada. There are the eight elements. And apareya mitastranyang praktising vidhime param jiva bhutang mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat. And there is spirit, which is another kind of prakriti, that is non-material, which consists of all the atmas who by their existence in this world keep it moving along. They sustain this. This world is sustained by the spiritual energy, not by the material energy. So first we should understand. People say spiritual, they think it's some vague feeling, but Krishna isn't vague. So even to ask questions, first, it's just like, you know, someone comes, they want to ask questions about relativity theory, Einstein's, you know, first go to school and learn arithmetic, algebra, geometry, trigonometry, calculus, and you got all the math, physics, and, you know, come up to that level and then discuss. Many times people, they ask, but... They don't really know what they're talking about. Just like, you know, They use words like knowledge, they use words like spiritual, jnana, but they have some vague conception. That's why, well, I guess I shouldn't have asked for questions if I was going to hammer you like that. But really the thing is to listen. Listen here and then try to understand. The thing is, if we come with preconceptions, we've heard from so many bogus people, and we read one or two books and we think, and now I know something, it becomes more difficult, which is another reason why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was so much hammering people. Actually, he called it a chopping technique. Because people would come with wrong ideas and he would chop them away. Because as long as you have them, you can't understand the real thing actually as it is. Srila Prabhupada said one reason he was able to preach successfully in the West is because people, they didn't know, they didn't have so many misconceptions, so they accepted what he said. That's changed now. Nowadays, people in the West, they know so many things. It's a problem, because they think they know, but they don't know the actual thing as it is. So if you can, as Srila Prabhupada often quoted from Prabodhananda Saraswati, Prabhupada paraphrased him, that we go to people and we speak to them very respectfully, and then when we have their attention we say, please give up all your hogwash ideas and simply surrender at the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, we are, in some ways people from Hindu backgrounds are better candidates for taking the devotional service, because they have, in their culture, they have an inclination to Krishna. But on the other hand, they've heard so many bogus things about Krishna from so many bogus people, and the whole culture is one of very much permeated by these Mayavad ideas that all gods are the same, and so many bogus things that to sort it all out is to get that out of the system is, it requires some chopping. Just like in India, you see, if any land is left free, all these thorn bushes grow up. So you have to, what are you going to do if you want to use that land? You have to chop them. Nowadays they bring a bulldozer, but for the bigger trees that even won't work. But you just have to chop this. What are you going to do with it? If you want to utilize the land to produce some good crops, you have to chop out the trees, all the thorn trees, which are useless. Maybe for firewood they can be used, that's all. So people have so many wrong ideas. We're all God, there are so many gods. This Baba is the latest avatar. The wheelchair avatar. Just for the first time in his life, he did something good for the world by leaving it. So many bogus ideas.
In the past, three devotees of Siddhanta Saraswati attempted to preach in the West.
Yeah.
And why did they fail?
Why did they fail? Well, Srila Prabhupada said, but he said that they weren't very sincere. That was his, that's how he relayed that to us. Said they weren't very serious about the mission. That was his analysis. Oh yeah, really, definitely. There's no doubt about it. That was Prabhupada's analysis.
In the Ray of Vishnu. The book Ray of Vishnu. He mentioned about.
Who mentioned? The author.
Yeah.
He quoted Prabhupada speaking about that, yeah. You could also see that the times were not, you know, the British people were very puffed up, thinking themselves the rulers of the world, and the Indians their servants. And shortly after that, the Second World War broke out. I mean, you could take it from that point of view also. But then when Prabhupada went to the West, it wasn't like there, he had a brass band waiting for him. Not by any means. He had to struggle, and he made his preaching field, actually. I mean, he thought, first of all, he'd go to the leaders, and the leaders would appreciate this good philosophy. That's quite clear from Prabhupada's purport to the first canto. He addresses his purport to the leaders of society. And he wanted to go among the more educated and sophisticated class, but he didn't find any interest. And so he went among the hippies, who showed some kind of interest, although they were behaviorally quite wild. But Srila Prabhupada found some spark of interest. So really, Prabhupada, he created the preaching field. It wasn't that the hippies were like that interested, or they saw Prabhupada as some kind of a curiosity. But as far as following the regulative principles, committing themselves to a guru, I mean, they were a long, long way away from that. So it was really by Prabhupada's determination, sincerity, faith, and his commitment to serving his guru that he made the preaching field. So Prabhupada could say that he could make that comment that his godbrothers were insincere, because he had done what they were not able to do. The conditions were, in many ways, the conditions that he went to the West were more difficult than those of his godbrothers. His godbrothers were financially supported, which he wasn't. Srila Prabhupada wasn't. They had each other's association, which he didn't. They had regular communion by post with their guru to give them guidance, which Prabhupada, he had regular communion, you could say, by the transcendental method, but he didn't have any such direct help in that way from his guru or anyone else. They could introduce themselves as members of an institution in India. They had introduction letters from important people in India, which had been contacts made by the Gauriamat preaching, which Prabhupada, he didn't have anything. His only facility was his faith in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, the holy name, the Shastra, the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the books which he himself had produced. So it could be said that the time was better, but I'm not sure if it was better. And definitely Prabhupada, he didn't have the same kind of facility that his godbrothers had when they went to the West. But anyway, as you brought up that question, I may answer that. You asked how Prabhupada's godbrothers went to the West and they weren't successful, and why is that? And I gave Prabhupada's answer, that Prabhupada saw them as insincere. But as disciplic followers, it's not our duty, or maybe even right, to go around propagating this kind of thing. And we should respect Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, even if he was sometimes critical of them.